This is Scott Becker. We have a private equity podcast today. We've got four great panelists, and we'll talk about some of the great trends in venture capital and private equity. Our four panelists, Lisa Suenin, we also have Shion Carroll, managing partner of the DAC Group, Matt Wolf, director and senior healthcare analyst at RSM, and a brilliant person. And finally, Holly Buckley, who does a ton of her work in the private equity world and also is the co-chair with David Pivnik of the Healthcare and Life Sciences Group at McGuire Woods. McGuire Woods is a very large private equity practice led by Jeff Cockrell, Tom Zahn, and some others, and Holly Buckley. Goal today is to talk about trends and what people are seeing in the deal world, the private equity world. We'll encourage our audience, anytime you have a question, to submit it through the Q&A type of format. If you can't get through that way, please text me and I'll give you a text number, 312-399-0774, and you can send your questions that way. Also, if you have the email that you registered through, you could also send me an email at sbecker at whichever email of mine you used. But sbecker at beckerstrategygroup.com works, or sbecker at mcguirewoods.com. So thank you for joining us. I'm going to ask each of our panelists to introduce themselves. Jeremy, I'll ask you to work with Lisa to make sure she's got her sound working before I call on her. Holly, I'll start with you and ask you to take a moment to introduce yourself, and then we'll start talking about the deal environment and what people are seeing. Holly.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. This is Holly Buckley. I'm a partner with McGuire Woods in Chicago. I sit in the healthcare group. I'm also the co-chair of our healthcare and life sciences industry team. I spend about 80% of my practice working on healthcare private equity transactions, both on the kind of platform side as well as add-ons and supporting platform companies. Very happy to be here today, and thanks for having me join.
Thank you. And Matt, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Happy to. Thank you, Scott. My name is Matt Wolf. I am a director at RSM, the leading advisory and accounting firm for the middle market. I lead our healthcare valuation team, so I support our clients in their transactions there. And like Holly, over 80% of my time is really focused on healthcare private equity deals. I also have a role at RSM as one of our healthcare senior analysts, where I spend a significant portion of my time studying what's going on in the broad economy, what's going on in the healthcare ecosystem, and kind of deriving what does that mean specifically for our clients as we all try to remain relevant and competitive in the COVID era.
Thank you. And RSM, for those that aren't familiar, has built this magnificent quality for earnings and sell side due diligence practice to become one of the premier practices of that sort in the country. Thank you for joining us, Matt. Shion, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Scott. It's a delight to be with you. My name is Shion Carroll. I'm a managing director with the DAC Group, which is a boutique investment bank serving the middle market. I lead healthy and distressed M&A transactions. As the head of the Special Situations Group for DAC, as you can imagine, I am very busy in the current economic situation.
Thank you, Shion. And Lisa, I think we've got your audio working. Can I ask you to take a moment and introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. This is Lisa Suenin. I am the leader of the venture fund at Manette Phelps and Phillips, and also lead our digital technology consulting and legal practice.
Thank you very much. Holly, I'll start with you, and then we'll go back around the turn, and we'll talk to Lisa a little bit more about venture investing and what she's saying, but it does a great deal of each. Holly, what are you currently seeing in the deal and investment market? I'm going to ask each of our panelists for our audience to follow about 2 minutes each on what you're seeing in the deal and investment market. Is it heating up? Is it slower? Is it bigger deals, smaller deals? Holly, can you kick us off?
Yeah, happy to. So I think the exciting thing is some deals are getting done. We closed a pretty sizable deal in the last few weeks. I'm not sure that it's public yet. but a nice size platform deal for a fund that had started pre-COVID, had stopped and started throughout this summer, and we finally got it done. We're also seeing add-on deals get going again, both closing out deals that started again pre and during COVID and went on pause, as well as deals that kind of started during the summer once things kind of got moving a little bit again. And we're actually looking at an incredibly busy fourth quarter, which is relieving and exciting at the same time. There's been some new challenges with these deals, such as how do we deal with these SBA PPP loans, and the SBA and the lenders have been having to come up with new regimes and rules for how that's going to happen. And so it's been a very real-time process as we adapt our documents and protocols for dealing with those. And then also, how do we diligence some of these other government funding mechanisms from a fraud and abuse perspective, as we are anticipating an interesting climate moving forward in terms of enforcement actions with respect to that government money. And then I think is the other observation I would just share is there's a not necessarily a shift in what investors are interested in, but certainly some areas of increased focus that were previously lesser. So obviously an easy example that I think Lisa may speak to is telemedicine, where it had been somewhat slow moving, and now it's become a really critical technology. And so I think all in all, things are looking a lot more positive than they were 3 and 6 months ago.
Thank you very much. And Matt, your overview of what you're seeing, you've had traditionally, or Sam's had traditionally, about the busiest quality of earnings practice in the business, rivals that of the big four firms, if not busier, because they're real focused of RSM. Is that practice busy again? What's happening in the world? Are people back to doing deals? What's your sense of what's going on, Matt?
Yeah, our deal teams, whether it's, you know, quality of earnings, technical or technology due diligence, valuation, I mean, we're back to kind of pre-COVID levels of activity within the healthcare space. And as Holly mentioned, a lot of that is driven by the emergence of deal making in telehealth or just kind of health technology in general. If we go back to kind of February, March, when we were forecasting what this might look like, I think, and I'm not an accountant. I work with a lot of accountants, and we're, you know, conservative by nature. So maybe we were overly pessimistic in our expectation of deal activity, but we really saw it kind of just grinding to a halt for a long time. And that hasn't been the case. People have found ways to not only execute on deals that were in the pipeline, obviously before the public health emergency was declared, but then been new deals, and we've seen a lot of activity around, in addition to health technology, but also dentistry, even surprisingly, and behavioral health, and especially primary care. So there have been some pockets of real activity. I'd say senior living is still kind of been slower to come back in some of those deal environments. It's never been particularly hot, but it's still been a little slower to come back. But I think, if we were to go back to February, March and say, well, you know, by September, October, you'd be back kind of at capacity, it would have been surprised indeed.
And it's fantastic to see and fascinating. And part of it is just that the private equity funds have so much money to put to work that one way or another, they're going to be investing and trying to turn their funds and grow their funds and then exit them in years to come too. Shion, you work both in the core environment, also the distressed environment. I know you've been very actively closing deals. Give us a couple minutes on what you're seeing out there.
This is a perfect time for a podcast, for a webinar, because just in the last few days, we have the Q3 results from the North American economy. So I can both give you some statistics and what I'm seeing in my deals. Q2 was obviously a trough for deals and exits. When consider that GDP drops 31.7%, it's not surprising. There's a bit of a rebound now. If you look at it, the number of deals are up about 23.5%, which is the first quarter over quarter gain since the last quarter of last year. But I really would warn people, there is a dichotomy of winners and losers. And one can see it both statistically and in deals that I've been doing. So, for example, people on this call are probably very happy. Many of you are in healthcare, so that's picking up. I'm heavily into tech. That is picking up. On the other hand, you'll have a sector like energy, which is in the doldrums. The deals that are really recession-proof, for example, I just closed the Comtel Comstar deal, which is in telecom. Those are going through. So they're really dividing lines, I would say, in the business, because many of the PE funds, despite what they say, are still not open for business. Also, they are picking their spots much more carefully. They're considering the downside mitigation more than in the past. Can I go into some changes, or do you want to keep going, Scott?
Let me do this. Shen, I'll come back to you in a moment. I do want to ask you, you mentioned energy versus technology, healthcare moving in the right direction, energy not moving in the right direction. I guess, will the election have impacts on any of this? And just quick thoughts on will the election have impacts on some of this?
There is tremendous concern in the middle market, which is where I operate, about the election. There is a concern, energy, obviously. You just have to read the papers in the last few days. But I can tell you that our clients, who are middle market business owners, are desperately trying to do deals right now. They're worried that their tax situation will become worse on a personal level, and they are very worried that their businesses are going to be adversely affected because there's a chance that we'll be taxed into another recession.
And so there is concern just on the deal market side in the long term about capital gains tax and so forth, and we'll touch on that at some point in the future. Not that I don't know there's anything people can do about it, but it is a concern. Lisa, your thoughts, you're an investor, you've led up venture capital funds, you lead up the venture capital efforts at Manat today. Talking about what you're seeing in the world today.
Well, from the venture side, it's been like crazy, wild and crazy. There's been no summer slowdown that you traditionally see, but it's also a very particular type of investing that's being done, and that's big rounds and late stage deals, lots of mega rounds. You know, deals over $50 million in venture account for about 6% of the number of deals, but something like 63, 64% of the dollars. You know, 80 deals that are over $100 million in investment, and a significant drop in the number of seed stage deals, a number of early stage deals. First time financing's down the lowest in a decade. So it's really bifurcated. I think, as Shion said, you know, we are seeing a lot of activity and valuations really holding up almost in the face of, you know, you can't imagine why, in the healthcare and tech side, and everything else kind of, you know, quiet. So very, very selective bull market on the venture side.
Lisa, follow up on a little bit on what you were talking about, because I think a lot of us are seeing the same thing in terms of seed stage. There is less and less appetite for high-risk small deals, but for larger deals where people think there's some sustainability and less fragility, there's a bull market in those kinds of deals. Can you expound on that just a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the numbers so far look like there will be half as many institutionally backed seed deals this year as last year, half as many. So that really speaks to how many late-stage deals there'll be in a few years. The early stage deals, you know, the next round have been down all year. I think that especially as a result of the pandemic, there's been a flight to quality, quote unquote. Not that the early and seed stage deals aren't high quality necessarily, but you don't know until much later. And so I think folks are much more interested right now, it appears to me, to invest in things that are sort of past their, you know, product market fit question and are investing to scale, especially since the IPO market has been so hot in healthcare and tech. You know, everybody's sort of lining up to do mezzanine types of things and hope, you know, a SPAC comes along and takes them out in a couple of weeks.
Fascinating, but it's really a fascinating perspective because particularly in the venture world, you see the same thing where less and less funding for small deals, sort of technology ideas and so forth, and more funding and really enormous funding for things that have some legs, some revenues, some profitability that look like they can scale. I mean, just enormous appetite for that.
Yep.
Matt, let me ask you a question because you do a lot of the valuation work, a lot of the analyst work. What are you seeing in terms of pricing of deals and what are you seeing in terms of multiples? How are you looking at EBITDA? And then I'll ask the very same question to Shion and Holly and Lisa. But give us a set, Matt. Are people normalizing EBITDA? Are they not? Are multiples up? Are they down? What's your sense of what you're seeing?
Yeah, so in general, the multiples are kind of flat to maybe declining a little bit in terms of, you know, it varies by sector, varies by geography too in some cases, right? If you're working with a physical provider of services, the geography is very important as we look to the future and even despite the uncertainty what effects of COVID there might be. I mean, but you said it, Scott, right? I mean, the private equity still has an incredible amount of dry powder. The demand for these deals is as strong as ever. And we found ways to get deals done. So that demand has remained strong and the supply of potential practices has increased somewhat, especially in some verticals, right? As physician owners look to cash out, whereas before they might not have even taken the call or email to talk to a sponsor. So, you know, that will naturally push those multiples down. And certainly, you know, we're seeing, and Shion can speak to this more, you know, the distressed market and what that's done in multiples there. So I'd say, you know, relatively flat to decreasing in certain areas. And in terms of the normalization, you know, a lot of the providers we work with, they're back 80-90% of productivity. And so the normalization question becomes just, and Holly mentioned this before, is, you know, what do you do about the impact of the Paycheck Protection Program loans if you received any, or the provider relief funds, Medicare advanced payments? How do you handle those and manage that as you think to the future? But, you know, certainly in a lot of providers, they've, depending on the geography, those volumes have come back. But, you know, for most everybody else, 2019 is still that baseline.
In Holly, your sense of multiples, deal size, EBITDA, how are people looking at those things? Can you give us a moment there?
Yeah, and I think in general, the fundamentals haven't really changed. I think the problem is, as just mentioned, the historic performance through 2020 doesn't support often the valuation that was created pre-COVID. So especially for these deals that were starting out pre-COVID, as well as ones where the Q of E is being done now, the Q of E and the performance don't necessarily track to where the sellers want to be paid, and the buyers know that the sellers want to be paid, and no one wants to take that downside risk. And so I think in non-healthcare deals and certain healthcare deals, that can be bridged with earnouts. In healthcare, earnouts can be more challenging due to the fraud and abuse risk, and so it's a bit more delicate. But I think the overall multiples and the demand is still very much where it was pre-COVID.
Thank you. And Holly, we're starting to see in the country, and it's really state by state, new surges in COVID-19 and so forth. Is this going to put a chill on the private equity market, or is it really, you think people are going to look past that?
You know, just my opinion is it doesn't feel like it's having an impact. And I think there was such a toxic reaction to the broad shutdowns that I get the sense that we're not going to see that again, and things are already in a pretty bad state, and we're seeing either very targeted or a strong resistance to shutdowns. And so my sense is that at least for the near future, we're not going to see as much of what we saw back in March, where it was an issue of first impression, but I'm not really in the know on how that's likely to play out.
And Sean, you've done a lot of work in the distressed area throughout the course of your career. There was a ton of predictions that we'd be seeing so much distressed properties, whether restaurant chains, hotel chains, all kinds of businesses that rely on in-person commerce. And yet it's not come as quickly and as fully as people expected. Do you think we're just seeing the lull before the storm, and you will see a ton of bankruptcies and opportunities coming out of distressed companies? And will there be appetite for those from buyers?
I had a fascinating discussion with one of the major real estate lawyers in New York yesterday. And he told me something which, since he does real estate and retail, he said it scared the heck out of him. He said he hasn't seen the bottom fishers really enter the market, which means they might be waiting for it to drop even further. There is a general belief that PPP has propped up a lot of businesses. I'm certainly seeing that in what I do. So there hasn't been the tsunami of filings that people expected, and many are saying going to come next year. I go back to what Matt, Holly, Lisa, everybody was saying. There's still plenty of money in the market. So one has to really keep that in mind all of the time. And I did a lot of research before I came on today and spoke to many PE people. And what they have really found, to their surprise, is if you factor in the results, and that's the careful language, if you factor in the results, the COVID reset on pricing hasn't really occurred. So
do you think it will, though? I mean, you have this whole mix of different types of firms, some that have had EBITDA really hurt, others that haven't. So even though it's not a pricing reset, are they being priced off of lower EBITDA, though?
I think that, to go back to what Lisa and I were talking about before, you're going to have a real dichotomy in this economy. And one of the big dividing lines is going to be companies that have a sufficient amount of capital and those that don't. And those that don't are going to be swept away. In that sector, you're going to have a lot of distress. In the sectors where they have, and companies that are able to manage to keep up enough capital, they are going to be well treated, because they're just not enough recession-proof companies. So PE is going to be chasing many, in most cases, the same opportunities. And so the multiples for those entities are going to stay the same. So I remember when I was at college, when they were teaching us about statistics, I had a lecturer who said, if you put one foot into boiling water at 100 degrees and another foot into cold water at zero, then the average is 50%. And I think that's really what it's going to be. There's going to be a real dichotomy, and PE is going to have to look for ways to differentiate themselves and to go beyond the safe, recession-proof companies, maybe even focus on diversity and move beyond their homogeneous networks. So if you think of DE&I, they're going to have to look further and more broadly than they're looking at the moment.
But your point is fascinating. It's what we've seen in the S&Ps. The five or six companies that make up the vast majority of the S&Ps today have really thrived, and everybody keeps on putting money towards those, which seem relatively safe. So multiples are through the roof, where in the rest of the universe, multiples are quite down. Lisa, you're an investor as well as an advisor. It means you really sort of split both worlds and see both sides of this. As an investor, how do you look at the market today? Do you look at this as primed with opportunities, or do you look at it very cautiously? How do you look at this as an investor today?
It's so complicated, because I think if you just look at this moment in time and you try not to look too far out into the future, it's very easy to get excited about the deal flow, the companies we're seeing, the late stage. But the valuations are so high, pre-money's of, $600 million, a billion more, on some of the companies we're seeing at the late stage. They're growing and they're good companies, but even still, by any traditional metrics, it's hard to justify the valuation. So if you believe, as many do, that the go-go times are going to keep going, there's a lot of good stuff to choose from. If you're cautious at all about, particularly about the market, leading to valuation decline, it's very hard to pull the trigger, because so many of the deals that are interesting and growing are already so high priced. And so I've been really trying to split the baby a bit by putting, more money in the earlier stage, even though that seems to be contrarian for this moment in time. But in things that are really different and less prone to being commodified, I think I spend most of my time in healthcare, not all of it, but a lot of it, and a lot of the things that are being, a lot of money's plowing into right now, I think are headed for commoditization. And it worries me that, that the opportunity there is short term in nature.
Another question, Lisa, on your point on short-term in nature, that people are putting money into highly valued things with the hope they'll be able to flip them in a couple of years, so they aren't worried about how the business is going to look 10, 20 years in the future. They're worried about how does the market look in 2 to 3 years. What impact would an increase in capital gains taxes have on valuations in the value of investing? Any sense of that?
I don't know. I'm not sure it's going to have a dramatic impact, frankly. If the unbelievable business damage that COVID has created hasn't, I'm not sure that the tax increase will. I think that one of the questions I have is how will corporations play? Their corporate venture has been pretty substantial contributor to the venture world. And we're starting to see it drop, which is, it dropped to the point of almost nothing in the last, big market contraction, which I realize isn't the same as your question, but be interesting to see how taxes impact everybody. And also just the tax of the pandemic, if you will. On the other hand, there's just so much money already in venture funds and put to work, and that needs to be put to work. I just don't see that causing any kind of slowdown in the near term.
Absolutely. There's only $2 to $2.5 trillion or so out there in private equity funds and private investing vehicles. When people have to exit on the other side, it will require a higher price to get the same effective return if capital gains taxes go up, which may or may not impact pricing on the front end of things. All of these private equity funded deals are done with leverage, which is critical to the IRRs of the investments. Holly, what are you seeing in the debt market currently? Is debt available at the right numbers for deals? Is it getting priced higher? What are you seeing in terms of availability of the credit funds, the credit behind deals? And then Matt and Shannon, I'll ask you the same questions.
So I have somewhat of a narrow vantage point here in that, I work on deals and then they close, which means there's debt available. And so my kind of limited observations are that during the summer, when things were, I'd say, pretty uncertain, as arguably they still are, there was a fair amount of platforms that wanted to proceed with add-on deals, and it was somewhat of a negotiation with their lenders in terms of whether credit would be available for those add-ons based on covenant issues at that point in time. And I think the last time we spoke during one of these webinars, my observation was that relationships were really key in terms of freeing up the credit to ensure that deals could get done. I would say now I'm hearing less dialogue about that, and credit seems to be available for deals. And so my sense is that things are loosening up, but again, I have a relatively narrow vantage point on this.
And Shion, your thoughts, what are you seeing in the credit markets? You just closed a couple deals. What's your sense of what's out there?
My word for today is dichotomy. One has to distinguish between those companies that have access to the syndicated markets and those without access to the syndicated markets. That's the biggest distinction. I can tell you that what PE is thinking. They feel that the lenders are risk averse, and the PE firms just don't have the same confidence that they had with lenders in the past. So what's happening is PE firms are putting preferred stock into deals, and they're looking to refinance in 1 to 2 years. There are many lenders, banks, that are licking their wounds at the moment, and they're a bit risk averse. They also have to make up losses in other parts of their portfolio. So they are repricing deals wherever they can do so, to the consternation and anger of borrowers, as you can imagine. So,
I mean, you've got it really right, though, because borrowers that are performing are getting stuck with a little bit higher interest rates, and they feel like they're being double penalized. They're living through the COVID environment, doing okay, and then having to buy higher interest rates to funds, don't they? Private credit funds and lenders.
The way it is done is if there has to be any amendment to one's loan arrangement, there are many lenders who are taking that opportunity to, in effect, reprice the deal. That's the way it's being done.
And from a sponsored company perspective or a portfolio perspective, you want to pay down debt, but of course paying down debt is not really the way to leverage the money and leverage the internal rates of return. You want to pay down debt so you're less held hostage to these lenders, but at the same time, you know it has impacts on your long-term IRR. It's really a challenging environment for a sponsored company or portfolio company. Lisa, in the venture world, any sense of what you're seeing in the debt markets?
Well, I mean, there seems to be a lot of money available on the debt side, but there's so much money available on the equity side that I think, and it's kind of a seller's market on the equity side. So I think there's a lot more focus there. I mean, groups like Silicon Valley Bank and the others are doing just fine finding clients, and sometimes, you know, often they add on to large rounds. So they're doing their usual business. But I do think it's so much easier to get equity right now that is, you know, the preferred path for most of the companies raising money.
And there's really a flurry of activity in Silicon Valley. I mean, it's as hot and busy as ever it is. We hear more and more in talking to venture capital funds, private equity funds.
It's interesting, because actually if you look at the last – if you look at this year, in venture anyway, you know, the usual top three states for venture, New York, California, and Massachusetts had like something like 75% of the money on the venture front, but only half of the companies. So we're actually starting to see a lot more startup activity outside of the usual suspects. And so a more, you know, equitable distribution of founders and startups. Really interesting to see this phenomenon. It's too expensive, I think, in California, New York, and Massachusetts for a lot of startups anymore.
Scott?
Yes.
Can I throw out a statistic which I just saw, frankly, today, so I haven't really been able to internalize it, but I found this fascinating. based upon year to date through the third quarter, the deals in M&A under $100 million are 68.7% of all M&A, and this percentage is the highest since 2016. I really have to think of why this is happening. I don't know if anybody else on this call has an idea, but it's a very interesting statistic.
But does that go to the point that there's a high percentage of deals under $100 million, but to Lisa's point, even so, or maybe Matt made this point, that there's still a lot more dollars being allocated to larger deals? I'm just not sure what the stat ultimately means, but in terms of number of deals, I think we said in the healthcare sector a ton of add-on deals because there's a real appetite on this sort of smaller practice side to be sold at this point where there wasn't before. And it seems to, at least to some of the private equity portfolio companies, a lot of excitement for buying lots of small deals. But there's small deals. There's lots and lots of deals, but the real dollars go into the big, big platform deals sometimes. In any event, a fascinating stat, Shannon, and we'll dig into that deeper on another discussion, another podcast or webinar. I want to thank our audience. I want to thank Lisa Soonan, Shannon Carroll, Matt Wolf, and Holly Buckley for joining us. Spectacular panelist. Thank you for joining our private equity podcast webinar today, Private Equity in the Deal Market. We'll get this distributed. 3,000 people will download it. And just a pleasure to visit with all you today. Thank you very much.